Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Now, Dr. Nina Burns is GP at Generation Health Medical Clinic, and she's with me now to answer your questions. We've been talking all through the ad break about screen time, and you'll be glad to know Nina says moderation in, with everything, including moderation. So I like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have mixed feelings about it. I think the content of what they're on is what's incredibly important. And for teenagers, I think those, you know, those apps that give you dopamine surges and social media, particularly the ones that concern me the most. I mean, there is quality out there on screens. And just like we monitor what books and movies our children are watching, I think if they're using them for educational purposes, it's very different than if they're on social media getting that dopamine hit. It's not the same thing in my mind.
Yeah, well, let's turn to people's questions that have come in. A texter says, I suffer very badly with my sinuses. I've been using a nasal rinse, which is quite good, but is there anything a bit more permanent that I could do? And a bit less messy, perhaps?
Well, so the rinses are actually very good and not always very messy. There are various types of rinses and they really are helpful in clearing sort of debris from the nose. It is very important that you're using quality rinses and that if it's any of those that you have to add water to, that it's sterile water. But, you know, rhinitis, which is irritated sinuses, or hay fever, to use a very colloquial term, is incredibly common in Ireland. We see an awful lot of people with it. And there are lots of different treatments. Different ones work for different people. So
is that down to climate that we have it, Nina?
I don't know that we've definitely identified exactly what it is. Climate certainly plays a role, you know, and different times of year, different things trigger. So some people, it's dreadful in the winter and that's the dust and the indoor kind of allergens. And then sometimes it's summer, you know, classically pollen and trees and grasses. So it varies hugely from person to person. Obviously add in viruses and colds and that's enough to trigger it for lots of other people. Some people it comes and goes, others really suffer. And there are prescription medicines. We use various sprays. Antihistamines are something you can get over the counter. You know, it's important sort of to mix up what you're doing, to take breaks from various treatments. But really, if it's bothering you, do go to talk to your doctor. There are prescription medicines that we'd use either short or long term to help.
Okay, brilliant. So when you said sterile water, do you mean cooled, boiled water? You can't just rinse water from the tap and use a nasal...
Yeah, no, so some of those rinses, you know, you've powdered that you then add water to. It's incredibly important that you're not just using tap water, because tap water can have a lot of bacteria in it. So really the water needs to be sterile, so cool boiled water or distilled water,
wow,
which you can buy. Yeah.
Well, lucky I survived my last collision with a nasal rinse. How long does it take for a black toenail to fall off, says a texter? Got stood on during a rugby game about 3 months ago. Do I need to get it taken off?
So, you know, the question is, how long does it take your nail to heal? Varies from person to person. The average time it takes for a toenail to grow out fully is 3 to 6 months. So I have this conversation with people a lot when they have a damaged toe or if they have a fungal toenail and, you know, and we're treating it. I always say the bit that's damaged or infected is not going to look different. When you treat it, what you're going to see is the new nail growing healthy. And so you have to wait for the full nail to grow out. So that can be up to 6 months in some people. Our nails all grow at a different rate. So you don't usually have to get them removed once the new nail is growing out. And often what happens is it eventually just falls off. Sometimes the injured nail can be kind of uncomfortable, catching in things, and then it's worth talking to someone about whether it needs to be removed. But in the majority of cases, no, you don't need it taken off.
And it is very common. I certainly hear it among hiking friends. You know, toenails can get damaged and fall off all the time, big toenails.
Yeah, they do. They get damaged easily, you know, and varies from person to person. So certainly playing a sport like rugby, you know, you're going to get trod on. You're going to have damaged nails. In the majority of cases, nails grow back fine. They do look different a lot of the time. They can grow back and look quite thickened or have ridges on them. It doesn't always come back nice and smooth. So it's always, if you're worried, get it checked. What I would say to someone, and it's very, very important to say, is you can get moles in your toenails. And if you have a black spot in your nail that is not growing out, that's not a damaged toenail. It's really important to see your doctor about it. So when we see someone with a black spot, if it's growing out, it's usually damage or trauma. But you can get a thing called subungual melanoma. It's a very rare form of melanoma, but it's really important if you have any change in your nails to get someone to look at it.
Wow. I'm a 58-year-old male, says a texter. For a long time, I frequently get pain up the back of my neck on both sides. Sometimes results in severe headaches.
So classically, people who work at desks, and you were talking about screen time, but that position we take when we're at a desk with a screen, we have our hands up and our necks down. And also if we're on our various devices, we're using our hands. They're really common causes of pain in the neck and shoulders. And I think anyone who's getting pain across the neck and shoulders, physiotherapy is a really good place to start, where they can give you some exercises to kind of keep your upper back strong. And it can result in headaches up the back of the head. So that's probably the most common cause, is musculoskeletal. Obviously, there are rare and wonderful causes. You know, sort of rare causes would be some strange cardiac causes, vascular causes can cause those kind of pains. So I would say to anyone, if you have a pain that's not settling with simple measures, you know, go along and chat to someone, whether it's a physiotherapist or your GP. And they can ask more questions, examine you and get a better idea as to the cause of it. But yeah, if this is going on a long time, you probably need to talk to somebody about it.
Yeah, while we were talking, I kind of rearranged my posture here.
Everyone always sits up when you say it.
Yeah. Your chair is important though, isn't it? And often with this sort of hybrid working in particular, we can be using the kitchen chair that's in some cases just meant to be for a quick meal and on you go, and you're sitting at it all day. So it is important that we look at how we're sitting.
Yeah, we talk about ergonomics, which is, you know, the position of your chair to your desk, to the height of your computer. And they're incredibly important, because if you're spending hours doing that and you don't have the ergonomics right, you're going to end up in pain. So
yeah,
it is really important. Yeah.
I'm in my early 30s, says another, and since my late 20s have increasingly worse indigestion. I had it there for about 4 days, including an episode of vomiting. My dad and granddad both had ulcers. Should I be worried? My doctor just gave me stronger indigestion tablets that are prescription only.
So a lot of people get upset stomachs from time to time and heartburn, and you can buy over-the-counter remedies. You know, you're only supposed to use them for a couple of weeks. If it's going on longer, go to your doctor. Again, your doctor will explore. We ask for what we call red flag signs. So we're looking to see, is there any signs of, you know, unusual weight loss or blood in the stool, or just symptoms that would make us think, OK, this needs to be investigated. Now, in people under 55, the general rule would be, if you kind of have classic heartburn symptoms without any particularly worrying features, is you would try a prescription medicine that just stops your stomach making acid for a month to 6 weeks. If it goes away but then comes back, we usually check for a bug called Helicobacter, which is a bug that can live in your stomach and cause irritation. If that's negative and the symptoms are still there, then you would get a gastroscopy. Now, that varies from person to person, because if there's any particularly worrying symptoms, we would go to gastroscopy earlier. And in anyone over 55, really, with new symptoms, we often go to gastroscopy. So again, taking something over the counter, it sounds like your GP is going down that pathway. They've prescribed you something. But if you take the course of medication for more than a month, 6 weeks, and the symptoms are still there, then you really do need to go back and talk to your doctor.
So you're on a bit of a journey with it, as you say. You start with the stuff you could get over the counter yourself, then you get a prescription, and then if that's still not working, you look further. Would you recommend keeping a diary of, you know, your day, foods you're eating, flare-ups you're having? Will that give a lot of information to the GP?
Well, certainly identifying triggers. I always say to someone, if you have a pain or any symptom and you know that, you know, every time I drink milk, I get an upset stomach, then obviously milk can be your trigger. In the same way we talk about triggers with migraines or any kind of pain, if every time you sit at your desk, you have shoulder pain, it's probably the position of your desk. So keeping a diary, being able to go in, and when you come to see a doctor, they're going to ask you, are there any things that trigger it? Any things that make it better? You know, is it better lying, sitting? So obviously being aware of those things is really helpful. But again, you know, you don't have to wait to go talk to your doctor. If it's worrying you, go talk to your doctor and they'll go through the things that you need to look out for and give you advice and send you off. And the important thing is that you're not taking medicine all the time. Like if this is a simple bit of inflammation in your stomach or mild gastritis, it's going to heal itself with that course of medicine for 4 to 6 weeks. If it keeps coming back, it's obviously not just a simple gastritis and it probably needs to be checked more.
OK, so all the best with that. Another says, I've had 4 miscarriages, all roughly around the 6 week mark. I've had all the blood scans, etc., and they come up with nothing. Is there any point in continuing to try naturally, or should I assume that there's something wrong with the embryos we're making and we need medical intervention? So obviously, you know, a very sensitive topic, a very tough thing to text. So we're sending you lots of love and support. Yeah. And what's your medical advice?
Yeah, so it's very difficult. Recurrent miscarriages, really, it's really heartbreaking because obviously this person really wants to have a baby. You know, it sounds like they're being investigated correctly. I would say never give up trying. You know, there's no harm trying. And you know, we all know people who've tried and even gone for fertility treatment and then conceived naturally. But if you're having recurrent miscarriage, and again, particularly if you're over 35, you know, it's sensible to go and ask your GP to refer you on to someone specialised. And they can discuss the various treatment or fertility options And again, you know, you never stop trying. You can still have unprotected intercourse, and that effectively is trying to become pregnant. Still keep taking your folic acid, which is really important if you do become pregnant. So they don't have to be mutually exclusive. Going for fertility treatment and trying to conceive naturally don't have to happen separately. They can happen alongside each other.
Yeah. And the language, I think, around fertility is really important. You know, obviously you're just trying to get it into a text message, but you said, do we assume there's something wrong with the embryos we're making and, you know, all this like failure to get pregnant? And it can be very tough, and it can add to the negative of the experience. So is it quite common to have miscarriage? You know, can this be part of people's journey? It doesn't have to be that you're failing at something.
No, and I hate the word failure when it comes to fertility, because it implies that someone's doing something wrong. You know, when we always say when we're investigating fertility, it'll be one third female cause, one third male, and one third unknown. So it's as likely that there will be no cause found as it is that there will be a cause found for a woman or a man. You're not failing and you're not succeeding. There's so much of this we don't understand. So much is in the hands of fate. So all we do is we try and help along, and helping along sometimes results in successful pregnancy and sometimes doesn't. But it's important not to blame yourself or to feel like there's something wrong with you, because it's very likely that there's nothing wrong. It's just for whatever reason, the perfect circumstances didn't come together. And fertility treatment is about facilitating those circumstances.
And we wish you all the best on your journey. One quick one to squeeze in before we finish. Do you have to stop the pill at 40? My BMI is 20. I don't smoke or drink. I've had one aunt who received a breast cancer diagnosis after 60. I tried to stop taking it previously, but my hair fell out and my moods and skin were affected.
So the answer to that is no. You can safely take the pill up until the average age of menopause, which is 50, once there's no specific reason that you can't. We usually certainly reduce the estrogen dose over the age of 35, and it's a very individual thing, so you need to talk to your doctor about that.
Okay, well, Nina, thank you so much for all of your advice. Dr. Nina Burns, their GP at Generation Health Medical Clinic. We, of course, didn't get to all of your questions, but we will hold on to them and try and get back to them next week.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk.